All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 511 for Thursday, March the 16th, 1945. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I'm really getting tired of dealing with people who don't know things that they should. Tonight, we have a madman. What's up, madman?
I kind of understand where you're coming from on that one. We've been having meetings at work simply because that's what happens at work. And I was surprised at how few people understood what was going on with the bank closings in my area. I mean, I didn't think everyone would know because it's a different area of banking than I actually work in. But I assumed the assistant VP would be more knowledgeable than they were.
Okay, my scenario is different. Mine was technical, and basically a lot of people who didn't know that logs were a thing. It's like
logs were a thing?
That logs were a thing, you know. Go read the logs, see what the computer did. Yeah, you know.
But that's not even something that a computer guy would need to know. I know logs exist. I'm an end user.
Like I said.
I mean, that's the whole reason we log into the fucking computer, so I can keep track of what the fuck I'm doing.
I don't know what to tell you. I was quite surprised at the lack of troubleshooting ability I observed. So, anyways, is it me? Do I have my expectations too high for people? I mean, I don't think I do, but it's like, I thought we were supposed to be playing the game at a fairly high level here. Come on. And, well, I guess maybe not. I don't know. So, anyways, I forgot to go get a drink before we start the show, so I guess I'll have to... just stick to the plain old dihydrogen monoxide.
Oh, God. This is horrible.
Don't worry, I'll go get some bourbon.
You know,
after
you can drown in that stuff.
You know what fish do in that? Well, you're drinking water. Do you know what fish do in water?
And there could be, I don't know, fish jizz in that.
Everything. The answer is they do everything. So, anyways, so of course we missed last week because I was traveling, and I've already got more trips lined up. So, probably going to miss, but that's not going to be till the summer. So, we'll worry about that as we get closer to it. It's like I'm technically going to be here, but it's going to be like dealing with a bunch of other stuff. So that's probably going to be a miss, but we'll see. Anyways, Psychros sent me an article here on, Sam Bankman-Fried on his, bail conditions. And, you know, it kind of goes over it, and he had some ideas in his question about some different, you know, proxying methods and SSH tunnels and things like that. But the short version of the story is that Bankman-Fried got caught trying to use VPNs to hide what he was doing on his computers while he's out under bail. And so Psychros was asking, how would you prevent somebody who knows a bit about computers from doing something like that? So we can read the articles and then discuss it, or what? I guess that's probably the better thing to do here is to read what he did. It's not that long, and then I've got a follow up article because the judge is not pretty is not happy about it, and then we can go into what the restrictions on this guy should be. Right, so. And then you have the other problem of he's out on bail. He hasn't actually had a trial yet. So, you know, you got to be careful what you do from the legal standpoint here. You can't be, you know, it's like, well, train him up in the stocks until he has a trial. No, that doesn't.
You can revoke bail. If you're out on bail, it means we've decided there's enough evidence to put you on trial. The only reason we're not keeping you in jail is we don't think you're going to run away. But you're not quite a free man on bail.
Well, I don't know why this guy's out on bail at all, truthfully. Given the level of fraud he perpetrated, he should not be out on bail. Now, I understand that it's very difficult to prepare a legal defense and all that stuff if you're not out on bail, but, I mean,
well,
I don't know.
Comes out of that, I guess they just didn't think he was a flight risk, because that's the whole reason of not giving someone bail, is you think they're going to run away.
Well, let's see what the articles say here. So this first article Sidecar sent me, and of course he sent me this, you know, last week, you know, the show we missed. So this is from March the 2nd. A few weeks ago, disgraced FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried was in danger of losing his bail package and potentially being jailed until October. The court was fed up with trying to monitor Bankman-Fried's online activity, and the United States District Judge Lewis Kaplan decided that the only option left was for Bankman-Fried to recommend independent experts who could help the court set appropriate bail conditions to limit any suspicious online activity. Kaplan gave Bankman-Fried until this Friday to find experts who could help the court determine precisely what tech privileges needed to be revoked to ensure that Bankman-Fried would be incapable of compromising the court's investigation into the criminal fraud case, Bloomberg reported. Well, if they think he's going to compromise the investigation, don't let him out.
And the prosecutor should have a good idea on what they need.
Yesterday, Bankman-Fried officially submitted his recommendations, naming two tech consultants he believes are qualified to advise on his bail conditions, Edward Strautz and Michael McGowan. Bankman-Fried supplied resumes for both candidates. Strautz was an FBI agent. Why is he going to... yeah, you're right. Why isn't the prosecution providing the experts? Okay. Strautz was an FBI agent in the 1980s and 90s, specializing in major international financial crimes. During that time, he created New York City's computer crime squad and investigated hundreds of cases alleging bank fraud. Since then, he has spent the past two decades managing an international consulting firm, Aon, where his duties include overseeing digital forensics investigations for corporate clients, trial counsel, and civil litigants. McGowan has a similar background with 19 years of experience as a digital forensics consultant, including 15 years at Aon. In 2019, he founded his own consulting company, Metaphor. His resume highlights his history of analyzing tech-related questions in high-profile cases, including analyzing Major League Baseball player Alex Rodriguez's text messages, detecting a forged contract with Mark Zuckerberg, and uncovering a deleted document that led to a multi-hundred-million-dollar settlement in a Zoom case. Strautz told Ars he has no commitment at this time. Ars could not immediately reach McGowan for comment. A spokesperson for Bankman-Fried's counsel, Mark S. Cohen, also declined to comment. It will be up to Kaplan to decide if these experts are qualified to help the court set new bail conditions. Kaplan decided he needed tech consulting after he learned that Bankman-Fried had been using a VPN. Bankman-Fried said he was using the VPN service, quote, just to watch the Super Bowl, unquote, Bloomberg reported. But the judge knew he had access to VPN at least one other time. And this suspicious online activity came after Bankman-Fried had already been prohibited from using encrypted messaging or call applications, specifically Slack and Signal. At the time, Kaplan wrote that his biggest concern was the messaging and call apps that Bankman-Fried was potentially contacting witnesses. Bloomberg reported that the court was likely worried that Bankman-Fried could just as easily have been using the VPN to cover his tracks while logging into a cryptocurrency exchange, transferring data, or accessing the dark web. In his order prohibiting Bankman-Fried's VPN use, Kaplan wrote, quote, the defendant's use of VPN presents many of the same risks associated with his use of encrypted messaging or call applications. If Kaplan accepts either or both of Bankman-Fried's independent expert recommendations, Strautz and McGowan will help the court determine what other tech could be associated with these same risks beyond encrypted messaging and VPN services. Okay, so that's the original story Sykros sent me. And Cykros had also mentioned that it was kind of dumb on his part just to fire up a, you know, plain old commercial VPN to start doing stuff online, because he was talking about S-Tunnel and a couple of different proxy applications, things that might not have been quite as obvious that he was firing up a VPN. I'm assuming they're watching his network traffic if they're telling him he can't use a VPN and that he can't use encrypted messaging. If it was me, personally, I wouldn't be bothering at the network layer. I would say you're only allowed to use devices that have our monitoring software on them, and then you load up, I don't know, Observe IT, or, you know, there's a couple of these different packages out there that are commercially available that, you know, you can set up a policy on them of when they screen capture, when they record, when they alert, because they're watching at the operating system level. They're spying on your computer like Microsoft Cortana does. That's what I would be doing. And then I would be having that software pinging home, you know, at a fairly regular interval. Like if the machine is on and the software is not pinging, you know, maybe have a couple of different agents on there, then, you know, okay, he's just violated bail conditions, arrest his ass kind of thing. Or just, you know, don't let him use a computer. Or just don't let him out on bail. Because, honestly, if you're trying to watch this stuff at a network layer, so much of the regular of your regular web traffic these days is encrypted with TLS that you're not going to get a hell of a lot out of that. You really need to be monitoring these devices at the device level. And, like I said, there's lots of software packages out there for doing that. Mostly they're sold to companies that want to monitor their employees or... You know, we use it at work for digital data loss prevention because you know, you're not going to block every website out there that might potentially allow somebody to exfil data. So we have to watch any device that has access to that data at a device level. And we've got a bunch of policies that, you know, yeah, if we see somebody firing up administration consoles or doing network file copies to servers that aren't on an authorized list, you know, we can go into the console and get a video of their desktop and what they were doing at the time. And that's, you know, from a privacy standpoint, that's terrible, but these are work computers. Like if you have an expectation of privacy on a computer that your employer has provided you, you're wrong. yeah, in Bankman's Fried, in his case, given the nature of what you're dealing with, either I just wouldn't let him out on bail at all, or I would just simply forbid him from having you know, access to, I guess, anything other than a basic flip phone. A feature phone, you know? It's like, you can have a phone so you can make calls, and that's it. You know, I mean, because the nature of his thing is all online. You know, they're concerned about him trying to do witness tampering from what they said in the article there. I just wouldn't even broach the topic. You know, it's just like, no, you don't get a computer. Sorry. You know, if you want to, or you can only use a computer under direct, you know, agent of the court, or what's it called? Not agent of the court, officer of the court supervision. Like, you know, we're going to have a police officer standing over your shoulder watching what you do if you're going to use a computer. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a bitch, but I mean, isn't that what you have to do in a case like this one? I mean, this thing's so high profile and there's so much money involved.
I think they would have better chance of denying him bail than imposing that much of a restriction. Simply because you're kind of right when your statement of he's technically innocent because he hasn't been on trial, hasn't been found guilty, and the restrictions that you're put on bail is to pretty much make sure you show up to court.
Well, if you're directly worried about him witness tampering and fucking with evidence,
revoke his bail is all you really got. I'm
right?
Thinking.
I mean, you know, I mean, if you think he's, if you honestly think he's going to interfere with the investigation and interfere with your, the ability to prosecute him, just don't let him out. And I've got a follow-up story here from Reuters. This is from March the 10th. U.S. judge on Friday said he remained unsatisfied with the proposal to impose tight restrictions on how the indicted FTX cryptocurrency exchange founder Sam Bankman-Fried communicates with the outside world while free on bail. Bankman-Fried is fighting to stay out of jail pending his scheduled October 2nd fraud trial, with U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan expressing concern that the former billionaire was testing the limits of his $250 million bail package. Well, I mean, the judge is certainly the one who can make the determination that, no, you're not acting in good faith, you know, back to jail with you. Prosecutors have charged Bankman-Fried, 31, with stealing billions of dollars in FTX customer funds to plug losses at his hedge fund, Alameda Research, and making tens of millions of dollars in illegal political donations to buy influence in D.C. Bankman-Fried's behavior while on bail became an issue after prosecutors said he tried to contact FTX chief executive John Ray and an in-house lawyer in a possible attempt to tamper with witnesses. Defense lawyers said Bankman-Fried was trying to help, not interfere. Bullshit! Nobody helps prosecute. Okay, you're not going to help prosecute yourself. Madman, I'm gonna kick your ass. Can you give me a hand?
I'm gonna send you to prison where you're possibly gonna get raped. Let's be friends about this.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, just Jim Carrey, I'm kicking my ass. Last Friday, prosecutors and defense lawyers proposed letting Bankman-Fried have a flip phone with no internet capability and a basic laptop with limited functions. What the fuck would that be? But be forbidden from using other electronic communication devices. Okay, what do they mean by a basic laptop? Because I've got like a $100 laptop floating around here somewhere that I can do a lot with. I mean, what, like a Chromebook or something? Because guess what? Chromebook can probably run most of the stuff you guys are worried about him running. Yeah. But at Friday's hearing, Kaplan said Bankman-Fried was inventive and could find a way to circumvent the restrictions and secretly communicate with others electronically. Quote, he could find a way around it and conceivably not get caught, unquote, Kaplan said. I guess that's true. I don't know how much... Like, I don't know how tech-savvy he is himself. I'm assuming he is because he started a crypto exchange. But I've met a lot of programmers who really couldn't figure out how to configure their own machines if their life depended on it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, sure, they can write their Java code all day long, but if they had to set up a web server, they'd be screwed. So I don't know what this guy really knows, right? I mean, maybe he really does know how to circumvent all this stuff and get around it. I mean, there are certainly ways. Cykros listed in his message several viable options for masking your traffic online. Now, that said, you'd have to get the tools on your computer. So if you're watching his machine that closely, you could watch it for unapproved tooling making installed. Again, these are all things that exist in corporate networks. So it's not like the software doesn't exist. It might be expensive. So it's not might not be something the court wants to deal with, because then somebody's got to monitor it. Somebody's got to run it. I mean, you're probably talking about an outside consultancy doing that. I mean, that's a pretty heavy lift, and at some point you just say, nah, you just go back to jail, you know? Christian Everdale, a lawyer for Bankman-Fried, said he would work with the prosecutors on a new proposal to address the judge's concerns. Late last month, prosecutors added new fraud and conspiracy charges against Bankman-Fried over the November collapse of his now bankrupt exchange, meaning he now faces 12 charges. He's pleaded not guilty to the original 8 charges in January. 3 of his former closest associates have pleaded guilty and are cooperating with prosecutors. Former Alameda CEO Caroline Ellison, former FTX technology chief Gary Wang, and former FTX engineer chief Nishad Singh. So, yeah. Again,
Yeah.
this gets a little weird because, I mean, the courts, the bail system wasn't really designed to deal with the idea that, somebody might misbehave while out on bail. I mean, again, you just arrest them again, add new charges on, and call
And
it
revoke
done.
their bail,
Yeah.
and then don't give them bail the second time.
And if you're concerned
And
he's going to be contacting people he shouldn't, just either don't give him bail, or if you're going to put him out on bail, say, sorry, you don't get a phone or a computer. I mean, I wouldn't even bother, basic laptop, that doesn't stop anything. I mean, you've seen how popular Raspberry Pis are. That's a basic laptop as far as horsepower goes. That's what the dojo's about, is running stuff on machines like that you wouldn't normally be able to run on. So just yeah, I'm not sure what they mean by some of this stuff.
the article saying so and so's cooperating and did a plea deal. With our system, someone taking a plea deal is no indication of them being guilty.
Well, that's true too.
Because we can pile on so many charges for just hitting play on a YouTube video that the average person's just going to say it's cheaper and easier for me to pay a $2,000 fine than to prove I'm innocent, if that's all I'm going to get. So when it comes to plea deals, it has nothing to do with your innocence or guilt. It has everything to do with how well can I fight this, and what penalty are they offering, and am I willing to go to undergo that to make this go away?
Well, and again, given the size and attention of this case, kind of going in to cooperate is probably the better thing, because otherwise the judge is going to be very inclined to be heavy-handed so they look good on TV. I hate to think that that is actually as big an, as a, that is a huge influence, but I'll bet it is.
Oh, TV? Yeah.
Well, in general, just the media. How the judge is perceived. So, but yeah, I mean, this seems like a problem they don't need to have. If you're, like I said, if they're concerned that he's going to do witness tampering or evidence tampering, he shouldn't be out on bail. I don't care whether it's on a computer or not. You know what I mean? If you're wanting actual technical methods of, if I was in this situation and I wanted to communicate out and not have it be monitored, how would I do it? I mean, that could be an interesting conversation. Of course, how would you catch somebody like this? Again, you monitor the devices they use, and you actually have to have somebody monitoring those alerts and seeing what they're doing. So, you hire an MSP, basically. Or SSPs, I think actually would be the acronym, and have them install a bunch of monitoring tools on the laptop, and then monitor them, because that could get expensive. But as far as getting around, if you're in a situation like that, how would you get out with use stuff without getting caught? Well, the way I would do it is I would look for somebody running a Necco server. One that already exists, not one that, don't you can't build one on your own. You can't go out and start setting up infrastructure if they're monitoring your network pipe. But Necco, I mean, we use it. It's a web interface to a web browser. We use it for videos and stuff like that within the group, but it's got some other uses in that all the web browsing technically comes out of whatever servers it's running on, and if you're watching the network traffic, it just looks like somebody's watching a video feed, because that's how it's presented, is as a video feed in a web browser. And, you know, really, you've got a remote desktop connection to a server somewhere, and then you do everything from the remote server. There's lots of ways to mask that kind of traffic. If you can get tooling on your machine ahead of time, then there's all kinds of stuff. As far as that, the DNS tunneling one is one of the more unique ones. It's always kind of fun, where they've actually managed to, you have to have a server out there running it too, but your VPN traffic looks like just a series of DNS calls over and over again. So if somebody's actively doing a packet capture, they'll notice it, what's weird, but if they've got something that's rules-based and they don't have any threshold reporting, they'll never see it because it looks like DNS queries, and those are normal, right? So, so I don't. The moment the article said the judge is worried about witness tampering and evidence tampering, why is he out on bail at all?
Yeah, once they have, I guess, reasonable.
That he's not making a good faith effort.
I'm worried about it. They have to have reasonable cause to worry. But once they have that, I'm thinking just revoke bail. Is using a VPN in and of itself enough to say that these days?
Well, it depends on what his bail is. The terms of his bail were, since they were saying that he's not to, you know, use any encrypted messaging, it would be a fairly easy argument to make that, you know, we told you not to use any encryption tools. A VPN is an encryption tool. And he goes, "Oh, I was just watching the Super Bowl." Well, we have no way of validating that.
And why would you be using a VPN to watch the Super Bowl?
It depends on where he is.
It's broadcast for free. You can watch it for free on the internet by going to whichever broadcast station that year.
A lot of them, I thought a lot of them, you had to prove that you had a cable account to do that.
If it's on a cable network, but the Super Bowl is broadcast. It is on network television.
See, because I was thinking, you know, I was kind of thinking like the Netflix thing, right? You know, where different regions get different things. And so, or like BBC, if you want to watch the free BBC stuff, you look like you're coming from Britain, it lets you do it. But if you look like you're coming from someplace else, they'll tell you to get a subscription kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wondered if that's what it was, but I didn't really give it a second thought other than, you know, but you just said it's broadcast, so you should be able to just stream it for free. Yeah, that is a weird thing, unless whatever network he's on has that kind of stuff blocked. But,
and
dude was dude had money. I mean, you really think he didn't have a TV with an antenna?
Turn on a television.
Yeah. So I feel like the use of a VPN could be shown as violating the conditions of his bail, and that he's not keeping up a good faith effort to comply. Now, you're being a bit of a dick about it, because a VPN is a pretty broad purpose tool, right? But, I mean, yeah, it is being a bit of a dick about it. But I mean, if you are dealing with criminal prosecution and you were told not to use encryption tools, I mean,
yeah, all we have is the letter. Intent when it comes to bail is kind of hard to go with.
Yeah.
So if it's encrypting it, then you're not allowed to do it. You've violated your bail.
Anyways, so I don't really, I think we've kind of beaten that one into the ground. I don't really know what else to say about it. So I think I'm ready to move on. You have anything else on that one?
Yeah. What's next?
All right. This one's from Business Insider. The rise of AI automation in the workplace is bad news for brilliant jerks of tech. I'm in trouble.
Brilliant jerks of tech.
Yep. Because I make no qualms about being a blunt force instrument at work. So, So whether or not AI ends up stealing people's jobs, it's undeniable that the rise of technology that can automate away many boring, tedious, or mundane tasks is going to change the way we work. With so much grunt work done automatically, employees will be expected to be more innovative and collaborative. You know what? I'm going to stop here for just a second because of the way he's framed this got me thinking about it. There's already a lot of software out there that what it does is parses the written word to extract usually key phrases out of it and then route the message somewhere, right? And you already have a lot of this with like legal forms and stuff like that, where the form is submitted as a matter of course because it's required, you know, to start a process. And in reality, they're going to copy a name out of it, put it into a computer program, and then, you know, run it that way. Company I used to work for did this with mortgages. They would scan the mortgage applications in, OCR them, and then extract all of the pertinent fields out of these documents and directly put them into the software and then use that to do the underwriting and the... all the other decisions around processing that mortgage all through a software package. And the paper went into a box and then just got filed for however long they decided they needed to keep it. I think it was like 7 years or something like that. And then just shredded. So it's like, if you have these software that's only picking out the key bits you care about on a form out, and then now you've got software generating the forms and the legal documents, I feel like you've got a lot of extra fluff that serves no purpose other than making lawyers from 100 years ago happy.
That and, now is it going to hurt some IT guys? Contract lawyers may become obsolete depending on how good these AI programs are.
Yeah, so I just...
Contracts are boilerplate.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is like you've got all this boilerplate text of a contract that some lawyer does have to sit there and draft up, but you're just using software to go through and extract out the bits you care about, and now you're using software to generate the boilerplate code. I mean, at some point, why bother with the boilerplate, right? If nobody's actually reading it, if it's just, you know, to... show
them. Oh, they're going to go with the boilerplate because at least when it comes to mortgage contracts, sometimes you have to foreclose.
Right. So it's the only reason you need all this crap is because occasionally the lawyers get involved and they like seeing all the language on the paper. And it's like nobody's actually using it. It's all the computers generating it and then deleting it when it's... maybe I'm overreacting to that, but I mean, you see where I'm going, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of contract lawyers being put out of business, depending on how good ChatGPT gets.
Yeah. Well, of course, now it's GPT-4, I think, is the one that just came out. So, those who get ahead in this new world, experts suggest, will be those with strong people skills who know how to bring teams together around an idea. That signals the end of one of tech's most enduring stereotypes, the brilliant, solitary jerk that nobody actually likes working with.
I don't think there were a lot of those.
They're not. Experts have said those who, I mean, you know, that's the house character, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay. You have a few people who think they can get away with that. I've seen it where they don't usually have jobs very long. Occasionally they do because they actually do are the only person who knows how something works. But usually people look for an excuse to get rid of that guy. Experts said those who can bring both the expertise in working with AI and the soft skills that make someone a good teammate are the ones that will flourish in the increasingly AI-enabled world. Quote, to build something great, you need collaboration and conversation in addition to data science to make and build the best technology, unquote, said Diana Lee, founder of marketing firm Constellation. Quote, what I notice with some data people is they just want to... just hit spacebar and lost my place. Son of a bitch. Here it is. In addition to... what I've noticed with some data people is that they just want to throw as much data into a model without really understanding how it speaks to a problem, unquote. The more AI becomes integrated into the workplace, those experts suggested, the more all workers can work with others to get more creative in solving issues. Okay, I've got thoughts here. We'll get into it. Lee gives the hypothetical example of her own firm working with a larger brand on a marketing campaign. To make the project successful, everyone, including technical staff like data scientists or back-end programmers, needs to buy in. Those who take the time, okay, that my opinion on this article has already changed, but that's when I first, you know, skimmed it, I didn't read a lot of this early language because I was just kind of seeing the whole idea of, you know, you were going to replace a lot of these hard technical stuff with AI tools that generate a lot of it for you. But this, I skipped some of this stuff, so I'm like, oh no, this is worse than I thought. So, yeah, those who take the time and effort to listen to the client and work with them to make sure they're all on the same page will be the ones who set themselves apart in the workplace. That doesn't leave a lot of room for the brilliant jerks who struggle to treat their colleagues and customers with respect. They may be very smart, perhaps even visionary, but with AI handling much of the actual hard work, they stand to lose whatever sway they had over the team. Quote, employees are already experiencing rapid integration of AI in their day-to-day lives and will need diverse and adaptive skills to navigate the landscape, said Rajit Kohli, partner at digital consultancy Zenevolve. Quote, currently the most important skill sets enabled by AI are technical and soft skill sets, unquote. He added that AI tools combined with interpersonal and collaborative skills create a more team-based culture in the workplace. Okay. I'm going to stop right there at that half. There's another half of the article, but it's now much less important that I've read the first half because I was going to kind of make fun of some of the ideas here. But, you know, I thought they initially had a point. But now that I've read it a little more closely, I'm like, oh, no. So what's happening here is this author doesn't know how much help they're getting in dealing with these AI tools. And this is not the first time I've seen this out of a, you know, what you would call the business types, right? So they see the computer and it's like, well, you just punch the data into the machine and it gives you what you need, right? That's how it works. You know, the AI tool means that it can write code and do all this other stuff for me, so I don't have to deal with the guy in the back who's always kind of disgruntled and upset that the things don't work the way they should. Well, you know what? That guy's upset because he's probably the one keeping the damn system working. And if you think, oh, we're going to replace him with an AI tool so that we don't have to deal with somebody who's, you know, not the happy peppy office culture guy, you know, who enjoys, you know, management terms like buy-in and you know, all this other stuff. It's like, no, you don't understand the amount of help you're getting from them. You really don't. I forget what conference it was. It was years ago. Somebody came in and was giving this presentation of how easy it was to set up a Drupal marketing site. And, you know, they just didn't understand. In this presentation, they were sitting there talking about how great these marketing plugins were and this store they set up and, you know, how they were able to just click, click, click through security. And, I mean, I wasn't just me. There were several people in the audience going, oh, man, they do not know how much help they got from somebody. Because somebody even asked who set himself that up. And so we had a couple of guys in the back who did that. And it's like, you don't even know what they did for you. You have no idea.
A couple of guys in the back that did that.
Yeah. It's like, you have no idea. So what's happened here is the person writing this doesn't know how much help they're getting from some of their technical people. Because a lot of times, especially with custom systems like this, you've got a sysadmin or two in the back who's keeping it working. You know, they're the ones restarting the servers when they crash. They're the ones configuring the systems. They're the ones doing all of the maintenance that has to happen on these large, overly complex web applications to make them work. Now, it's entirely possible, because this person works for a marketing company, that they outsource all of this anyway, so they never even see it. It all goes through an MSP that manages their IT platform and their website, and so they're just writing a check to a consultancy company that manages it for them, and they never actually see it. So they're saying, oh, AI is going to replace all those crummy tech people with, you know, the stuff we so we can just keep the happy bubbly office people in. It's like you don't understand the scope of the problem if you really think that's going to happen. I've played with some of the AI stuff. It's cool. It can do a lot more than you would expect. When we were playing around with ChatGPT, it was writing example Python code that I thought was actually pretty good. It had problems. It wasn't perfect. But it would be... It would not be out of the realm of possibility for somebody to assemble a program using ChatGPT to put together bits and pieces of the code, similar to how some programmers today build projects by copying and pasting from Stack Overflow. Now, when I say that, you might think I'm being, you know, insulting of programmers. I'm not. I mean, we've all done it when you're putting something together quickly and you just, you know, you happen to find something on Stack Overflow that's fairly close to what you need. What do? You copy it in, you change what you need to change, and you move on with your day, because otherwise it's going to take you forever to figure out what it is where somebody's already solved the problem for you. So now all you're doing is replacing getting on Google, punching in your problem, and finding a question on Stack Overflow or another forum. But Stack Overflow is always the common one for the joke. Well, now you're just asking the AI bot. And what's happening is the AI bot is most likely doing that exact same thing in the background. It's going out and it's finding the post that it's already indexed that's a close match and just copying the code out of that, possibly changing it a little bit to match the prompt you gave it, and then just spitting it out of the screen. So if you wanted to use it to generate a bunch of chunks and of your project or code or objects and things like that, I mean, I could see that as being a kind of a force multiplier, sure. But if you don't have somebody who knows what questions to ask the thing, it's not going to be able to generate what you need. And even if you do have somebody who can get the right questions out of it, if they don't know how to apply that stuff out of it, it's not going to do you any good. So this whole idea of, oh, well, we're just going to replace the brilliant jerks with AI, I doubt that. In fact, you're much more likely to replace the people who write the copy for your marketing with the AI than the tech people who, you know, make all the systems go. Which was going to be my original point with this article anyways. Did you have any thoughts on that, Mad Ben?
I was thinking you're just going to go from having 5 tech guys to 3 tech guys. The 3 that know how to make it work. And possibly only one of them know how to make the AI work, and the other 2 are just doing the things you need once you get the code from the AI.
So
I don't see it replacing. I see it downsizing. Anything.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly augmenting the existing people. But, you know, this is a Wish article. Who's the author on this? Amelia David. This is Amelia David's hope for the future, because she's probably got some tech person she has to work with that she doesn't like, and she's hoping to see that one get replaced. It's like, oh no, you should have to have the people skills and the ability to ask the AI for what you need, not, you know, technology skills. It's like, it doesn't work quite like that. You know, because you still need somebody kind of making it. You still need somebody who knows how to glue it all together, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody is good at working with ChatGPT or the other AI tools, they can probably get fairly far with it. But it's not ever going to be complete, and it's just going to be kind of taped together. And you were asking for problems with that. So,
I saw a good example of what I think this is going to work out actually earlier today. Chess masters actually look over the whole Deep Blue chess playing computer thing.
Sure.
Those programs are now ubiquitous enough that chess masters, they can pull them up all the time. And the best chess player isn't a robot. it's a human using the robot code, because the robot will pull up, here are all the possible combinations of moves you can do from this point. Humans are better at picking which one it is out of those combinations once the computer narrows it down. So I'm thinking AI, at least right now, since it's not true AI, it's going to be a great tool for someone who knows how to use it, but it's not going to get rid of the entire human component. Like I said before, it'll be a force multiplier.
Yeah.
In a department where you may have at one time needed 10 people, you might cut it down to 3 people or 5. I don't know how much of a force multiplier it's going to be, but it's going to be a force multiplier. Your less talented people are the people that can't use the tool as well. They're going to be the ones out of the job.
But it doesn't help.
It's not going to get rid of your tech department. And if the asshole's the one that keeps everything working, you're not even going to get rid of the asshole.
But ChatGPT can't run your network lines. It can't fix your desktop when the thing breaks and you have to swap parts. Now, sure, the end user could do that, but usually you don't want somebody you pay a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, you know, to be doing something. You know, it's the same reason you hire secretaries, right? You don't want your high-paid employee sitting there managing a calendar as opposed to doing the part that actually makes you the money back that you're paying them, right? So, at the same time, there's a lot of things in that brilliant jerk that ChatGPT's not going to touch, especially when it's things like knowledge of a legacy system that nobody's documented, but this guy was able to figure it out, so he's the one that now supports it. That's one you see a lot. So, yeah, I don't know. But this article is some marketing person's wish that, you know, the AI is going to replace the need to have these, you know, people who don't have people skills in the office. We'll just replace them with the AI because the people skills will be the ones that, you know, do well. Well, I mean, I've heard that for 20 years. And you know what? Like I was saying, in my job, I accept being a blunt force instrument. And my boss has use for that. Mainly it's, you know, these people are not doing things right. Go yell at them. So, and usually I don't even have to yell at them. Usually I just do the whole start asking questions in that it's mildly annoyed tone I do.
And we're going to use the Socratic method on them.
Yeah, kind of. It's like, okay, that system that you're trying to log into right now is the one that's locking out your service account? Yeah. Okay. If it's locking out the service account, do you really think your Windows login is actually going to work on the box because it can't authenticate to Active Directory? No, so why are we even bothering to try that? It's like trying to drive on a flat tire. You know it's not going to work. Why are you bothering with it? You're just going to make it worse.
Oh, it'll work. Does it work for as long as you want?
For some definitions of work. So, but yeah, I mean, that is kind of what I do to people at work. So I was like, okay, why are you doing it like this? This is dumb. You probably ought to do it like, you know, I mean, that's what I start doing to them. And I know some people hate it, especially because, you know, they want to catch me in a mistake doing that and they have yet to do it. It'll happen. I mean, we all fuck up, but I know some people who were, I had one of them say they're really annoyed that they haven't caught me in a mistake when I start doing that to them. So, anyways, I mean, he was giving me a hard time about it, but it was funny. We had a network guy who was like that too, who was absolutely hated it when I would do that to him, and he quit before he ever caught me in a mistake, and he said that was a regret. Well, because I was, you know, when I'm trying to get it done, I don't really care that I'm, you know, hurting their feelings by doing that to them and treating them like, you know, a kindergartner. Because it's like, no, we've got to get shit done. We don't have time for this. But anyways, last article I had for tonight is from Torrent Freak. It's another one of these people are suing to figure out identities. I think looking at the clock, well, in January, a month before Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania was released in theaters, a link to a leaked script was posted on the Marvel Studios Spoilers subreddit. Last Friday, a Marvel Studios affiliate filed DMCA subpoena applications to compel Reddit and Google to expose the leakers. One named user account is shared among the subreddit's moderator team. Court documents indicate the plan is to force Reddit to expose them all. As Reddit fights to protect the identities of users who simply participated in piracy-related discussions, two new cases filed last May also proved controversial. On February 17th, 2023, Marvel's Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania kicked off Phase 5 of the Cinematic Universe. I didn't realize that was actually still going. Distributed by Disney to lukewarm reviews, the movie took $105 million at the box office its first week, and then plummeted 70% to $32 million in week two. Well, maybe that's why I didn't hear about it. It sounds like it wasn't that good. Thanks to a leak posted online about a month before the movie's theatrical debut, some fans already had an idea of how the movie would play out. Marvel's pursuit of the leakers is likely to have a storyline all of its own. When MVL Film Finance, LLC, was incorporated in 2004 and 5, its purpose was to finance Marvel Studios' production of 10 live-action or animated films based on up to 10 of Marvel's comic book characters. Several related business entities, including Marvel Studios and parent company Marvel Entertainment, are owned by Walt Disney. Last Friday, at the United States District for the Northern District of California, Marvel Studios submitted a declaration in support of a DMCA subpoena application targeting Google. Matthew Sladoff, Marvel's Vice President, Global Security and Content Protection, informed the court that his responsibility includes monitoring and addressing infringement of the MVL film financee's rights. According to Sladoff's declaration on January the 21st, Disney anti-piracy analysts submitted a copyright infringement notice to Google after discovering the Ant-Man and the Wasp content had been uploaded to systems operated by Google without MVL's authorization. The takedown notice, submitted via Google Web Form, contained a prompt from Google and a response from the rights holder. And they've got some data here. So, I'm not going to read this whole thing. Pretty much what happened is somebody got a hold of the script to Ant-Man and the Wasp, whatever the last movie was, and they posted it on Reddit. And so now the company, through whatever convoluted corporate ownership scheme that's basically Marvel, Marvel Studios, is trying to sue Google and Reddit to figure out who leaked this script, presumably under copyright. And, you know, I mean, of course, they've just filed. Google hasn't really said anything. I don't think Reddit has either. But we had the same story about piracy a couple weeks back with people trying to get Reddit identities through lawsuits. And I just think it's weird that they're submitting subpoenas saying, you know, tell us who, you know, Triple Xbox Gamer, you know, No 360 No Soap Sniper Wolf is, or whatever the fuck the screen names are, right? So it's just like, really? That's to the point we're at now, is you're getting subpoenas over who the hell a screen name is? And that's even assuming that Reddit has that information.
And how's Google involved? Do they own Reddit? I don't think they own Reddit.
No, but they found links to it through Google, I think.
The Google index is everything.
Yeah, Google was linking the Reddit post, I think. It might have been other places it was posted to, and they submitted a DMCA takedown, and I guess Google didn't do what they wanted fast enough. I don't know. I mean, it's like, it really reeks of somebody not understanding how the internet works.
Because I could see going after Reddit saying, hi, this guy posted on your site, I want to know who it is. And then Reddit's either, we require you to open up an account, or we don't. And I don't think they do.
If you want to post something, I think you need an account, but I don't think you even need an email address. I think you can just set it up a username and password.
Okay, so they're like, here's a username and password. We don't really have a true registration system.
Well,
here.
I think they've got I think they'll have logs of whatever IP address you were using at the time you posted it, but I mean, it's like, okay, so you might have a timestamp and an IP address, so now you're back to suing the ISP to get the ISP to tell you who they are. I mean, is phishing, I know phishing is a thing in police work, is phishing a thing in the legal field where you just file lawsuits and hope something good happens? Because that's almost what this feels like.
Well, it's actually the way all financial crimes are prosecuted, because if you're doing forensic accounting, you usually don't start out with a name. You have an account number. And then you see, okay, who's attached to this account number? Okay, it goes to this shell company. Okay, who owns this shell company? All right. Are these just names on a template, or are these actual involved people? If they're names on a template, you find out, okay, so who set up those names on this template? So yeah, it's a long practice thing in law.
Names on a template just reminded me. Remind me after the show. I'll tell you that story, because it's a little too direct to share on air. But you just reminded me of that one, and it's a good one. So,
but you still need to have a good faith estimate on their involvement. That's why I was thinking, how are you suing Google? Because it gets back to the whole argument we have of, you don't go after the landlord, you go after the tenant. And on this case, I can see Reddit being the tenant, you know, in an apartment complex if they're selling drugs.
Yeah.
The full throwout. So I could see Reddit being the tenant in this case, and if Google was providing a service, them being the landlord, but I don't see how they get directly from Google to Google from someone posting on Reddit. So I could see them filing a lawsuit on Reddit saying, these guys are using your forum to post this shit, I want to know who they are. And then either Reddit knows who they are or they don't. And if they don't, Reddit just says, we don't know.
Yeah. So, anyways, I hope these kind of lawsuits don't get anywhere, because I don't want to see that being a regular practice of, oh, here's a pseudonym, we don't know who did it, but we think they said something naughty, we're going to sue the ISP, you know, try to figure out who it is. I mean, that's a hell of a way to dox somebody. So, let's do this. Hadouken! All right, for what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is, this is actually pretty cool. So it's called Box 86, and it's a Linux emulation layer, and they also have a SKU of it called Box 64, which I'll link the GitHub as well in the show notes there. What these do is, these are specifically Linux runtime libraries that translate calls from a x86 or a x64 program, you know, standard desktop, to whatever the host system is, and it can be, they can compile it on anything that, you know, is 32-bit little Indian. So the main example is ARM chips. So this lets you run any x86 Linux program, primarily games, on ARM, like a Raspberry Pi or some of the Chromebooks that run ARM, or there's some higher end ARM chips floating around out there too. I've potentially the Linux versions running on the Mac M1 stuff might be able to take advantage of this as well. I don't know if anybody's built that yet or not, because I know the Mac M1 Linux is still fairly young. And I think they've got full running desktops on it, though. No, I think it's fairly far along, but I think it's still early days on that stuff. So it's not, you know, a lot of stuff hasn't been tested. But here's where things get really fun. Okay, So these things will translate x64 and x86 Linux programs to run on like an ARM Linux. It also works with Wine. So you can run Windows x86 programs on Linux running on an ARM processor with this library. So, you know, they've got pictures of here, people like running Doom 2016 with Vulkan and stuff like that. So, you know, it's fairly far along. They've got it doing some translation calls. Still needs, you know, they're still working on a GPU. I didn't see this before. They do actually have a note about running it on ASCII Linux, which is the M1 for Macs. The GPU driver is experimental, so making progress. So what I'm thinking is that you might be able to grab an ARM single board computer that's, you know, maybe not crazy powerful, but you could load this x86 up, and it would probably be a beast for running old school like DOS, Windows 3.1, Windows 98 games, stuff like that. And then all your user space is still ARM and still, you know, whatever Linux. I could see this being quite useful for spinning up interesting builds, you know, CyberDecks and stuff like that, or task-specific machines, because you can run the old, you know, the example they show here is Ski-Free running using Wine through x86 on an open Pandora. And so that's, I think that's badass, being able to translate the calls around like that. So
I'm just flashing on playing Star Trek Armada on a chip architecture not meant for it.
Yes, exactly. I think that's fucking cool. So I'm going to be playing around with this at some point. I've got a stack of Raspis, but I'd like to get some stronger ARM boards. I've got an M1 Mac, but like I said, the Linux SKU for that is fairly young, and I haven't had a chance to mess with that yet. I did talk about switching to Linux on my main rig, and I've been working on that. I'm having a hell of a time finding something that plays nice with the graphics, the GPU. Specifically, with running external monitors and the like. I've got them to work, but they don't seem to run external monitors well. So I was actually looking at maybe doing something different. I was looking into using Moonlight Streaming because I'm wondering if I could just build a Windows VM that all it does is run the stuff that you absolutely have to run under Windows and just stream it to another device that actually runs Linux properly. You know, it might even be the Steam Deck or something. You know, just use a Steam Deck as a desktop, and anything you can't run on it directly, stream from a VM running Windows, you know, hidden somewhere in the house. So, I don't know. I'm playing around with ideas right now. But anyways, do you have anything on that, Madman?
No. I'm just running pretty much everything that you mentioned with ARM. I'm thinking, how do I make an emulator that will play every Nintendo game on that?
Oh, that's already done. You want a Raspberry? That's done. There's already builds out there for doing that. Yeah, there's several actually out there. In fact, what you ought to look into if you're wanting just something that runs every emulator for like the 16-bit systems and down, look up a company called Abernic. They sell little handhelds that basically come with emulators already on them. You can load most ROMs on them for like your 16-bit systems and down. I think some of the higher end ones will do like some of the PlayStation stuff too. So, you know, if you want something like that. But anyways, of course, that's all we got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, we had El Hazard, Cyberlard, Psychros, Madman, myself, and Sardonyx. We are still missing the coffee maker. He has not returned.
I've shunned him. there are certain appliances that don't need to be on the internet. That's one of them.
All right. Let's play some
sound. Now, we missed RU this week, but I think he's trying to go into either Parliament or the Prime Ministership, whichever one involves hunting down a koala bear and strangling it with your bare hands. I don't know which one of those two posts is that.
I thought he was just going to break into Parliament, not join it. I might have gotten my wires crossed on that one. I need to make some phone calls. All right, guys, let's play some sound effects and get out of here.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Nose down and call tonight.